With newspapers, like, this whole model has disappeared because of the internet. It's very hard to make money on journalism. And that's a problem because journalism is important, right? Good journalism is important. But these days, it's very hard to make money off of it. And if it's hard to make money off of it, all we see is clickbait and driving engagement.
Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you,
as well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day, working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to our minds.
So what is a topic we wanted to discuss for many months and never got to?
It's this notion of ethical responsibility of software makers. Now, the two of us, we're software makers. We make software for a living. And it's interesting how multiple times we've discussed stuff like addiction, social media and distraction and notifications and kind of us trying to manage this so that we stay sane and, you know, so that our devices stay ours and not us starting to be our devices kind of property in a way. And we also discussed briefly probably at a few times stuff like surveillance, data collection, privacy, encryption, etc. And it's just interesting to me how in the world of software, all of this is kind of, this is fine. Like, this is just a choice a company makes, and it's kind of up to you and up to how people maybe see you, which is like maybe good PR or bad PR. But it's interesting to me how in more mature fields, there is a notion of practitioners of a field being somehow responsible for their actions, sometimes legally, and even if not legally, then ethically in a way. Like, doctors kind of pledge to do the best they can for their patients. And it's not like, oh, it's fine. Like, this is, you know, like, if we do it this way, we'll have more data and it's kind of drives our engagement better, right? And it's like no, there's a sense of like, you have ethical responsibility as a doctor to do the right thing. And if you're a lawyer, there's the same story, right? And, you know, those are fields with arguably in some ways like more important, like grander consequences for things going bad, or at least it's like the consequences of doing things wrong is more obvious. And those are fields that don't change as fast, that have a lot of legal barriers, which are difficult to work through. But it's just interesting to me how software defines today's world. Like, everything runs because of software. Without software, we move back the whole civilization, half, more than half a century back. And yet we don't feel like we're responsible in any way for what we do. Like, if we work at some company X that wants us to spy on our users in a way, whether you would call it like that or not, like, you'll probably measure analytics to drive engagement or whatever the way you frame it. But there's just like a lot of things that are dangerous in what we do as software makers, and those dangers are not as obvious. They might become more obvious in a while, in maybe a decade or so. But the consequences of things going wrong are serious. We just haven't seen them yet. They're not as obvious as someone dying on an operating table or something like that. But they're serious. And I think as a field of software makers, maybe we should get more serious in like how much responsibility we take for our actions.
Yeah, this is when you were talking, I was just jotting down notes what we should discuss, and I have notes for I think 5 episodes now. Okay, in the productivity field, we have this notion of a trusted system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this notion of that in order to be productive, you have to put your stuff, your ideas into a trusted system. Right, and then you have to have a way to retrieve this information, in right time to be able to perform your tasks, projects, and to achieve your goals. And Nosby, our application, becomes a trusted system for hundreds of thousands of users, and this notion that we are running a software business where, by definition, we are the trusted system, right? People trust us with their data, with their information, with their tasks, projects, hopes, dreams. We have to keep reminding ourselves that, we are running on a thin line here, and our choices are really important. And increasingly, in our type of software, so Nosby as a project time task manager, this already is a trusted system by definition. But also, as you said, by other choices we make, by how we do pricing, by how we do sales, by how we track people or not track people, but what we do with the information, what we do with, and also how we design Nosby. So how we design our system so that, as you said, we can create kind of addictions to drive, to drive usage, but it's mm-hmm. a wrong thing, for example, it goes into the wrong direction, or we can, we can by design, for example, force people kind of not to do something for their good, right? So mm-hmm. so there are so many things. I mean, it's a very complicated and complex idea, but there are so many angles to this. There are so many angles, and let's try to talk through them one by one. But because we very often don't realize how much responsibility we have, but we do. We do, and we have to really be mindful about it.
Yeah, and I would like people to think about this responsibility not just in purely business terms. Like,
exactly.
If we had a data breach and the information of our users was stolen, this would be very, very bad for our business. But it's not just a bad thing. It's not just something we want to prevent from happening because it would be bad for business. It's just like, to me, that feels like a very ethical obligation, because people really put important private stuff, private thoughts in there. And we have to protect that because it's right, and not merely because it could destroy the company.
Yes. And that's why... when people, it's like very often we don't advertise that behind the scenes we take care of things more than you think we would, right? Like, for example, I had this discussion the other day about backups, and people are like, yeah, but I want to have local backups of Nosby because in some case, whatever. I'm like, really? We have triple backups of everything in live on 3 different continents of your data in an encrypted form, just to make sure that even if our main server blows up today, we can retrieve the information from just before the blow up and just keep and then Nosby will be just fine, because this is so important, and not because, as I said, only because of business, but we really don't want to lose your information because we are a trusted system for you. So things like that, or for example, in the customer support system that we have behind the scenes that our customer support reps are using, when they can see activity of an account, like, because when somebody writes them an email, they can access the account information, who the person is, and they can see some activity, and over there we already hash out the details, so the customer support rep cannot see the exact task names and project names, again for the sake of privacy. Our reps don't really care about your tasks, really. They don't care about, the details of your tasks. These are your tasks, not their tasks. But, and on the other hand, we just shouldn't show it to them. We shouldn't, we have the technical, way of doing that. But again, I would say that if we wouldn't, you know, hash out the details, it would be again a breach of trust that the users have with us, that we don't spy on them, we don't look into their tasks, and we really we not only say that, but we design our systems in such a way that it prevents us from even, you know, from even tempting us to look inside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's like a, to me it feels like a stepping stone, like a solution that we have, because that's the best possible solution available to us. But like the ideal is a system where we have no technical means of accessing that data. Like, to me, end-to-end encryption is really the goal. It's extremely difficult to do in something that's not just for your private data, but something that has to synchronize with the whole team. It's just like, maybe it's possible in theory, but there's just no way we could have built that. Maybe one day infrastructure will appear to allow small companies like us to build something like this. But I really like seeing how Apple, for example, as a big company that has a lot of capabilities to build that stuff, over time, more and more services that people use are end-to-end encrypted. They are encrypted with keys that only the user has. So if you send an iMessage to someone, for a long time, like, iMessage was really problematic. Like, messages would appear out of order and whatnot. Thankfully, as far as I can see, that's a problem of the past. But the reason behind this problem is because they're doing it right. They're not storing, like, can you imagine how valuable it is to have like years of your private conversations with everyone on the internet? Like, what a treasure trove of data. And it's good if Apple had, you know, systems in place that would make it very difficult for anyone to access it. But the best solution is to make it like technically impossible to give the only keys to the user. And again, to me, it's not just a matter of like, hey, what happens if Apple servers were breached? It's a matter of ethical responsibility, because over a long enough timescale, it's inevitable that something will break, that something will leak, that some government somewhere will want to access that data, maybe by force. And to me, like, when you realize just how valuable all of that stuff is, even though that's still kind of not common understanding that this is important and valuable and worth protecting, it's not enough to say, hey, it's kind of hard and we like to have analytics because we can make us grow 5% a year faster. It's a matter of like, hey, this is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I very nicely mentioned that our goal and our end game, and I'm hoping that, you know, maybe in the next decade we'll be able to build Nosby in such a way that it will be completely encrypted. I mean, this is our goal, like, without question. I don't want to be able to see customer data at all. Like, you know, it would be for me a relief, actually, to be able to have it. But for example, we're already doing the things that we can do. So, like, for example, when you attach some a task, a document to a comment to a task in Nosby, it goes to Amazon servers, Amazon S3 servers, encrypted already, and the key encryption keys are already on a different servers. So, for example, if somebody would breach this Amazon server where your important document is, the document is rubbish because they cannot decrypt it. So we're already doing, you know, these small stepping stones to be able to encrypt as much as we can. Again, to just protect the customer data as much as we can.
Yeah, and this is great. Like that's kind of the That's the sort of thinking you do in computer security. Like, you minimize the surface area through which you can access some data. So in your example, if there are some auxiliary servers that only store data, like, if you can cut away some part of access to them, and like that's better than nothing. The end game is not not on the horizon just yet. I'm not aware of anyone, not even a big company, building what would be this idea, like a tool of like as complex as Nosby that would be completely end to end encrypted. But I hope one day it becomes possible.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. That's why, you know, we're again, what I just wanted to highlight is where, you know, there is a choice. We can store the, you know, we can store things like this, like for example, documents on a server, you know, as it is. But we choose already to do it because we can. This is possible. But as you said, end-to-end encryption, when you have a shared project with shared tasks delegated, you know, and different teams, you know, it's really complicated and it's still not feasible at this moment. But I'm sure it's going to be. It's coming. It's coming. And what, as you said, I applaud Apple for doing that. There are other, you know, solutions. Even Facebook has WhatsApp, and WhatsApp is encrypted.
Yeah, but they bought it from someone else. So
You see, exactly. But they, you know, but for example, Facebook Messenger is not. So yeah, I prefer WhatsApp. You know, if given the choice.
Yeah, and you know what? Like I've heard stories from friends how they would have ads popping up on Facebook, which like as far like they would think about it deeply, and it's like an ad you'd not expect to see, and like the only connection they can think of is something they wrote to someone else on Facebook Messenger, like in a private conversation. That's super creepy. And you know, it's not just creepy, but it means this data is available, and it's available to a lot of servers crunching a lot of data, and again, over a long enough time span, it will leak and it will be damaging.
Yeah, I'm what I'm concerned about, for example, is the customer awareness or lack thereof, or just plain lack of caring. Like people are so careless with that. You know, they post things on Facebook which they shouldn't be posting. They given a choice, they use the tools which are inferior, which don't offer encryption. They don't care about it. Like Apple is, I applaud Apple for, you know, highlighting this over and over again, that they are, you know, they care about the privacy. They have this differential privacy. They have the iMessage encrypted. They really say say these things to give people, I mean, to make people aware that this is actually important, as you said, that this is, you know, like using services from Google or from Facebook, you know, you're a product, and it's okay. It's okay to use them. You know, I still use Gmail, but my most important information is in Nosby, not in Gmail. So I don't really care. You know, this is just email. But I just use it for convenience. But if you think about it, you know, people are using, you know, are using these free tools for like and putting their very, like, very important information, and then later they are just, you know, outraged that this is being used against them.
Yeah, but more often than not, people are not outraged because there just isn't enough awareness, I think, of how dangerous this is over the long term. Like, you know, when the Snowden thing happened a few years ago, it's like a huge big deal, right? About how much the US government just, you know, spies on everyone. And a lot of people were like, okay, so what? Like there just isn't the leap of imagination to extrapolate from that and see how this could end very badly.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is, I don't know, and that's why I think, again, Apple's, for example, as a good, you know, as a good citizen, their long term game is to make people aware of this, and I'm not sure if it, you know, if it brings something. I hope more, you know, and more companies will highlight that and will explain to people. But I think people have to really get burned to really understand it. So
yeah,
so,
I think it's going to be a lot worse, and actual, like, obviously bad things will happen before people will realize this. And as for Apple, I get a sense we already discussed this briefly on the show, but there is this notion that because Apple does end-to-end encryption, they cannot do AI, they cannot do machine learning very well, and Apple has been pushing a lot of that over the last 2 years getting a lot better fast. Mm-hmm. And I wish they prove to the world, and not because I'm an Apple fan, but I want them to prove that it's possible to build a product that's good, that takes advantage of technology like machine learning, without having to collect all the data and, you know, just have user private user data available to them.
Yeah. Another thing is which I already mentioned briefly in the beginning of the show is that so stepping away from that is the fact that when we design our application or any application, we design it for different for a certain kind of usage, right? For a certain pattern of usage. Like as we said, there are some companies who are focusing on your engagement, and engagement is the most important thing. They don't care if you if you really get a benefit or any benefit from this. The idea is that you have to spend as many minutes as possible in the application as well, as such. So this is for them. And for us, of course, engagement is really important. I mean, we want you to use Nosby to manage your tasks and projects. If you don't do it, you know, you might just fall out of the wagon and just completely, you know, get disorganized. That's one thing. But second thing, which is even more important, is how we design things, you know, how we design our app. That very often we place the button here because we don't want you to use it as often as possible, or we want you to use as often as possible. Like there are so many design decisions based on what we want you to do for your good, or we don't want you to do. And in our case, we want to drive engagement by helping you, add tasks as easily as possible, or manage them with as few clicks as possible. All these things, but also to teach you this. I mean, a certain style of productivity, a certain style of getting things done, and. Some people might like it, some people might not like it. That's fine, you know. I mean, the world is a big place and there are many, you know, other solutions. But we have a certain style or certain, you know, theme or certain way of doing things. And what I really like about this is that this keeps us focused. This keeps us questioning. Should we force the user to do this or that? But and also, on the other hand, discuss this and quarrel about it with our users, that they, no, why are you doing this like that? Okay, actually, because this is good for you, because we want this. All right. Okay, this is, you know, I like it. I like this fact that we can, you know, by interface design, by, you know, process design in the application, we can teach people things, or teach people good habits, or teach people, you know, some kind of behavior.
Yeah, I agree. And sort of getting back to the theme of ethical responsibility, I think it's problematic that this whole engagement tracking and this whole obsession with analytics is problematic. And the reason why is because it causes you to optimize for the wrong things. Mm-hmm. Is it really a good thing that we make that, you know, the world creates apps which make you addicted, right? Which are just like over time with analytics and engagement tracking and tracking how much time you spend on it, you know, to maximize it as much as possible, and you tighten the screws on the Skinner box, and then you're just like, you know, pushing notifications and badges and like whatever you can do to drive engagement, or in other words, addiction, right? That mm-hmm. you just teach your users to crave this dopamine rush of the pull to refresh Skinner box, like see if there's something new on the feed. And it's just like, you know, it of course it's easier for us to say because we make a productivity tool, but even for us it would be easy to get obsessed with numbers and the wrong numbers and start tracking engagement seriously. And you know, there's a bunch of things we track over time, but we don't obsess over it. We don't track how much time our users spend in the app over time. Like I think we have this data kind of by accident on iOS and Mac because of the bug tracking software we use. But it's like what does it really say to us? Like, how is it a good thing that someone, you know, spends more time in our app? What does it say to us? Like it doesn't tell you if they're spending more time in the app because they're using it as a trusted system to organize themselves better and they have a benefit from that? Or are they spending more time in it because we pushed so many notifications and badges and things popping up that we just turned our users into machines that have to, you know, pull down to refresh to see if there's something new, which is not good for their psychology and it's certainly not good for the productivity, right? And again, like for us, it's a bit easier to say because if we're serious about productivity and we don't have a free app, we don't care about, you know, ad views or whatever. We want people to pay for the app because it's good. But still, like it's, to me, it's a matter of ethical responsibility because I'm addicted to a bunch of stuff. I'm addicted to Twitter. I feel this and I don't want to be a part of this problem. I don't want to be the one creating software that makes people addicted.
Yeah, this is what I often discuss with people and also with new hires. We just recently hired new people through our team, is that what I love about our business is the fact that it's not a creepy business, you know? Yeah. I am not selling you cigarettes. I'm not convincing you to buy a crap software that, you know, with shady techniques so that, you know, I get you addicted or something like that. No, I'm selling you a tool that gets you more organized, that hopefully is only in the background, but your tasks matter, not, you know, the tool itself. The tool is in the background helping you achieve your goals, you know? Like for me, what I'm always repeating to new hires especially is that, and also to ourselves, like, just think about it. You know, every day people wake up in the morning and they open up Nosby to plan their day, to prepare, you know, like this is amazing. You know, there's a big responsibility for us, but it's also like an amazing feeling that, you know, people depend on us, that, you know, to for their agenda, for their, you know, goals. And that's why, as you said, I wouldn't want to be in any kind of different business that would, you know, be kind of creepy. You know, I mean, I'm just privileged and happy to be in this kind of business that I know when I'm selling you Nosby, I know I'm not selling you shit. I know I'm selling you something I believe in, I use every day, and, you know, thousands upon thousands of users are using every day. So I know that what I'm selling you is good. So, you know, it's a privileged situation, but I can't imagine doing anything else.
Now I hope you start to see why I care about this notion of ethical responsibility, because it's precisely because we're so privileged that it's easy for us to say, that it's easy for us to cut down on the things we decide are not that good and kind of be smug and proud of ourselves. But like, I want this, I don't know how to do it, I don't have the power to do it, but I want this to just become a value, to become something that people in this industry have in their minds, because a lot of businesses are much more difficult from that perspective. And it's just very difficult to have a business that just doesn't naturally drive you to collect a bunch of stuff because of ads or whatnot. Right. And I want this to be a value in people's heads, because if people think about it in terms of like something they have to do because they're a software developer, they pledge to do good for the world because, like, of course they're a software developer, this is a serious responsibility, then maybe, just maybe, or maybe I'm being naive, but maybe the world of software would be a bit less crappy and a bit less creepy. Hope so.
Yeah, but the thing is, the difference between our business model and many other business models is the fact that we don't, as you said, depend on ads. We have a free tier of Nosby, but it's just, you know, for people to use for free, like up to five projects. But the rest is a paid product, and we live off the money. So we, like, our customers are co-investors in the company, kind of like they give us money. But very often, I mean, most of the time, businesses depend on ads, and ads, you know, and the ad buyers, they want to have as much information as possible, to have the ads as targeted as possible, to have the ads as effective as possible. which translates into as creepy as possible, right?
Yeah.
And that's the problem of many, many businesses, that they rely on ads, and that Google, as much as we love it as being, you know, crazy lab of crazy ideas, it is a glorified ad agency. So,
yeah, it's true. It makes me think of the whole thing with journalism and newspapers. It used to be that journalism was largely about, you know, it happened in newspapers, which had a geographic monopoly. And because they had a monopoly, they were good, profitable businesses, and they had the margin, the resources to dedicate themselves to, like, proper journalism. And of course, you can argue about that, and, like, everything wasn't so rosy and pretty, and I know all of that stuff. But like, the whole point is that, because, like, when something is a profitable business and there's margins, it's more likely that it's not super crappy.
You have the margin to invest in good stuff. I mean, you have the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see that every time something becomes a complete commodity, it just becomes horrible. Like, it's so hard to make money, like, to make good margins on being an airline, for example, right? Because it's a commodity. Like the service is the same. Like, you might get a slightly better food in Lufthansa than in United, but ultimately what you care about is getting from point A to point B. And because it's the same, it's hard to make money, because the price is the most important thing. And because of that, there's no margins. And because of that, airlines are horrible, right? And so with newspapers, like, this whole model has disappeared because of the internet. It's very hard to make money on journalism. And that's a problem, because journalism is important, right? Good journalism is important. But these days, it's very hard to make money off of it. And if it's hard to make money off of it, all we see is clickbait and driving engagement and tracking things to the max, right? To sell the most creepy targeted ads possible, and just spy on people. And it's like, it's hard to go through it. And so what I said earlier before about hoping to have this value in people's heads, that's one thing. And, you know, I hope this will happen, but I also see how it might be naive to think that this will just happen. What makes me more hopeful is kind of systemic solutions. So when we talk about surveillance and privacy, saying, like, what we say we do, that's important. That's good. The fact that we have a business model that doesn't incentivize us to spy on our users is better. But what's best is a technical solution that prevents us from it completely, right? And so I don't see a good solution to it yet, but I want to see business models and all other kinds of systems I'm not thinking of right now that would make it possible to create, for example, sustainable journalism that doesn't require you to be creepy, right? Because, like, when all you have is, like, everything flowing down to Facebook and Google, and the product is free, and people don't see a point in paying for that, then the structure of incentives gets us to the point where we are now. So I don't have a good answers, but, like, values is one thing, but I want to see better technical solutions, better business models, like, better structural solutions that wouldn't incentivize this happening.
Yeah, but there is light in the end of the tunnel, actually, I think. People, on one hand, you know, they are addicted to social media and to Facebook and to Google and whatever. But on the other hand, there is this slowly, you know, appearing model, you know, like, for example, the Mac stories, like, they have the Club Mac stories, and they charge, you know, a monthly fee to be in the club. And then there is, like, the New York Times, I think, is pretty successful with their subscription model. Like, there are emerging models, and people start appreciating paying and supporting, news sources that they have. And So hopefully, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be sustainable for them. And then when it is so sustainable for them, they have the resources to investigate, to do a really good job. And so I think, you know, it's a, there is a light in the end of the tunnel, but it's a slow process because it's a big leap and it's a big change that happened. You know, the business models of yesteryear just don't apply anymore. And they have to change. And people also, as you said, have to change their minds and their mindsets, and appreciate good journalism, appreciate good art, appreciate you know, good design, and appreciate ethics and values there.
I just hope we don't have to go through the extremely painful process of it becoming a catastrophe first before people wake up. That it will happen kind of gradually enough that, you know, that will just go through it, and, you know, it will be a threat that could have been but never materialized. I wish that on the world.